Alrighty, so just to let you know, first off, I will be editing some of the things that you say to do ums and ohs.
I am an
and
editor by trade.
Alright, so you know what's up.
I'm a video editor, but I get it.
Oh, cool, very cool. So tell me a little bit about you guys got together as a band. How'd it start?
Speaking of being a video editor, I was talking in the hall with a couple of other TV editors on some reality show I was working on, and we had just... The show had just started, so I just met them and getting to know them, and we talked music, happened to like the same kind of music. And I was like, oh yeah, I was in a band back in high school, like 20 plus years ago. And they're like, oh yeah, what'd you do in the band? I'm like, I was just the singer. And both of them go... Turns out they were in a band, and their singer had just quit.
Okay.
They were about to play their first gig, and their singer quits on them. And so, for me... I'm all about networking. Like, these are editors that do what I do. If they let me in their band, it means I'm going to have guys that will going to want to keep me employed when they move on from this show.
Yeah, for sure.
So literally, that was my mindset. You know, I'm a father, working father of three. It's not like being a rock and roll band is my career goal or anything.
Right, totally.
But, so they auditioned me in the bathroom, and then they invited me to practice. And then they made me their lead singer. And then they named the band after me.
Okay.
I'm dead serious. It was not my decision. It was the guitar player. The founding member said, oh, we were trying to think of band names and couldn't settle on anything. And he just spits out, why don't we call ourselves Gablack? And I'm like, no objections? None for me. So that was the inception. Obviously, there's a lot of more behind the music that happened after that. Real quick, I kicked both of those guys out of the band eventually. Mm-hmm. The two guys that I met as editors that invited me into their band, I ended up kicking them both out for different reasons, but ended up getting some world-class musicians in. I mean, that's why they were kicked out. There are these other guys that were better. And,
right.
So.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And how did you guys get the gig at Griffin's? Because you're much louder than the music they typically play there. So who do you know?
Hey, I warned Joe. Joe said you can play here anytime you want.
Okay.
And I go, well, wait till we play here once before you say that. But they went on our, you know, we have one music video up on YouTube, and he heard it. And his son, he has two sons at work there. One of them, the one that showed him the video was... one that works in the kitchen and is the cook, showed him the video. He's like, Dad, this is what we're going to have in our place? He's like, yeah, as long as they bring people that drink. And we do bring people that drink. People, we've been looking for a place to play regularly. We played at the Rose like four or five times.
Okay.
The Rose calls us and says, look at our calendar, pick whoever you want to open for. With a few exceptions. There are certain big, big acts that come in there that don't have openers.
Right,
you know,
right.
We want to pull open for Styx. Like, yeah, they don't let openers. We want to open for Ted Nugent. Yeah, they don't have an openers. The problem with playing there, they require us to sell tickets ahead of time. Pay to play, crap. We always bring enough people, but it's such a time-consuming thing for me to reach out to my friends, to get tickets in their hands, to get cash so that it's not coming out of my pocket.
Right.
So though the venues are fun to play and they're big and it's like the crowd is real fun, it's just too much time and too much drain. We just want to jam.
Yeah.
You know, we all have jobs and lives and families, and we have a limited amount of time to do our craft. That's like half the time we're gigging or half the time we're recording and writing. We don't have time to go sell tickets. So since most of our fans live in South Pass, well, our strongest fan base lives in South Pass. So I've made friends with Joe, and like, could my band play here? He's like, because he likes me, because before he even heard our music.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to let us do it. It's going to be unlike anything that's ever happened there.
Yeah, we go there pretty frequently. We love that. That's actually where our first date was at.
Oh, yeah, very nice. Oh, so this is a very personal story for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, like any chance that I get to check out new music there, we do, you know.
Yeah, we're both big live music fans.
Oh, same here. It kind of ties right into something that I'm sensing. I mean, it's something that feels like it's percolating, and it's... I mean, I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to, like, elaborate, but all I can say is I feel that there's something happening that the good, I'll just say this, the good thing that's happening at Griffins of Kinsale is spreading in the whole, in the town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a scene.
Agreed.
It feels like it's like organically happening. There's just some high level, high quality, good people in this town
mm-hmm.
that just want a close, safe place, like for their kids. It's a family friendly venue.
Yeah.
And it's down the street, and it's it. I mean, Little Silver Hearts.
Yeah.
Donnelly's band.
Yeah, I met Ed at the at Eclectic.
Yeah,
had a chance to meet him and shoot the band. Yeah.
So, yeah, they played there. They played at Griffin's last Friday. Yeah, okay. A week ago. It was also one of our friends' birthdays, so it was packed.
Yeah.
And since I've become friends with the owner and his sons, and you know the bar back. Like I'm in the kitchen helping him like load the ice or the ice water or whatever, just pitching in. I'm like asking him how often is it like this? Because it was slammed. They only had two bartenders that night mm-hmm. and they were just barely keeping up. And I'm like, how often is it like this? And he's like, never.
Mm.
And I'm going, wait, when my band comes here, it's going to be like twice this. Mm-hmm. You're going to need at least bartenders. And I talked to Joe. I said, how many bartenders can you have at maximum? And he says, no more than three. Because if I have four, you've got them waiting for the other guy to put down the bottle. It's just inefficient. So right. Three is the best function. He says, if we need, we can put a mini bar downstairs. That'll maximize his profits. Like yeah, people can go downstairs sure. just to get a drink. It's right downstairs, pop right back up. You can still hear the music. So I'm going to recommend that he does that.
Because
we're... This is a big night, not just because we're playing locally, where all our fans can come, but we are, it's our release party for a single that the Beastie Boys producer recorded.
Right.
It's
The Reluctant, right?
Yeah. It's a big song. It's a big night for us, and we had band practice last night, and I was kind of holding off on releasing it, because, you know, it's like, you got to time it right, and it just feels like...
The right time.
Feels right, so...
Awesome.
Releasing The Reluctant, Friday, June 16th.
That's awesome. What are you doing as far as, what I mean to say is, how do you guys like write your music? And your lyrics specifically, as a singer myself, I have a tendency to always ask that question because processes seem to change with everybody, you know?
You are a musician and a songwriter because only that soul would ask that question. And I love that you asked that question yeah. because... A lot of people don't think about that.
Yeah.
But for me, obviously, as the singer and lyricist, that's what matters most to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that band I was in high school, when I was 17, they just played covers. And I'd been writing poetry since I was like 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do original music, and I quit that band. Fast forward, I was never in a band after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still wrote. I still wrote poetry and lyrics. And then this band starts throwing... When I first got into the band, even those original members had some original tracks they were writing. And they just said, hey, can you write to this? And mm-hmm. I started just looping it on my lunch break. And I didn't... To date, I have not come into the band with lyrics. So let's put music to this.
Mm-hmm.
I have... absorb the music that this group of guys produces, and that's the message. Just obviously it's the sound, the emotion of the sound combined with whatever's going on in my life, whatever's it just. And I've had songs where I start something just yeah I can write to this, and it'll like it's good, but it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the right thing comes, and specifically The Reluctant is by far the most collaborative song of all of our songs. Like, even the drummer wrote, like, Fredo Ortiz, the Beastie Boys drummer, that's the guy on our recordings. He's a touring musician. That's his profession. Like, that's how he makes a living. So he has to tour with bands that can pay him. So he's rarely in town when we gig. We've played live with him once, but we only record when he's in town because he's our drummer on our songs. So that day we wrote that song, we all got together. The bass player had one little riff. That was it. So we just started with that and just all contributed on saying, hey, why don't you just repeat that for the verse? Oh, yeah. And then the drummer goes, why don't we just drop out here and then I'll do this. Perfect. Had no lyrics. I mean, we even just vamped the end. Just vamp it, and then we'll just end. I'm like, I loop that, and it's the most work I've put into lyrics ever. But it's like, for me, literally, I wrote the lyrics to fit what we recorded. And it's it's perfect as it is. It couldn't be a measure longer. It couldn't be a measure shorter. It's like, that is like as organic and collaborative as I've ever been with the song. And the fact that my guitar player, who grew up with the Beastie Boys producer, and I'm all in the back of my mind, I was like, you need to ask him to record us. You need to ask him. Never said it out loud. All
right.
He goes, you know what? I'm going to ask Mario to record this. Mm-hmm. Mario Caldato. I'm like, this is the one. There's some high level people in town, like very, very high level professional people in the industries that, you know, we all value. And there's this guy who's like, I'm not gonna say names, but he's about to like hit in a big, big way in what he does. Mm-hmm. And he's like our number one fan.
Cool.
Like this guy, when he hears me sing this song in concert, because I wear a blindfold when we do this song, and I stand perfectly still, and something about it is like speaking to him. Mm-hmm. He's like, dude, that song, we have to do a music video for that song. Like that guy telling me, okay.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
That's awesome.
As you can see, I can just go and go.
Yeah, no, it's more the merrier as far as I'm concerned. So tell me about your guys' like influences, because you're all over the board with it. Like, there's a little punk, there's a little metal, there's a little rap. So, I mean, it's like... So what are some of your personal favorites?
My musical history... my dad had a record collection. I didn't live with him my whole life, but when I was there, that was one of his favorite things to do, was sit and put vinyl on the turntable. He taught me how to do it. And so I grew up with a lot of classic rock. I mean, the way I taught myself to sing was the Coasters.
Mm-hmm.
I was 9 years old, moving away from my dad to live with my mom and my stepdad. He gave me a cassette tape of the Coasters. And it was like, Charlie Brown, he's a clown. And I would sing every word, yaggity yag, don't talk back. And so it's the highs and the lows, and it was just fun music. So that's it, like the beginning of me learning how to sing. But then when I moved back in with him when I was a teenager, I had these friends that said, you've never heard of Led Zeppelin?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no. I'm like, they rock. And so lo and behold, my dad has like 4 or 5 Led Zeppelin albums. And I put it on, I'm like, yeah, they do rock. And so they're like my greatest, I mean, I could never sing like Robert Plant.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I don't know, the emotion, the brilliance, that, you know, that he's a composer. Jimmy Page is a composer, you know, and that's what sets him apart. He writes stuff that is familiar yet you've never heard before. Mm-hmm. Anyway, or... I'm going to anyway. So that was always my favorite. But then I got into thrash metal, like mostly Megadeth. I lived in Northern California, where like Metallica was the big, you know, band that was up and coming, and I was more of a Dave Mustaine fan. Felt, I don't know, more of a purist. I don't know. He felt more like a soulful songwriter in that genre, and then there was Slayer and then Exodus, and so I got into that scene, and then I really stopped listening to music for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I just stopped, and then when this band came back, well, I mean, I would listen to KLS, classic rock, for me, those are my influences. Now, the rest of the band, Steve, our guitar player, he's a slightly older, never got into the thrash or the grunge scene. They like. Literally, he'll play anything Jimmy Page could play, and it sounds like him. He was playing an acoustic piece one time. I had my back to him. I thought he'd just put it on, like playing it. I turn around, and it's him playing it. I'm like, whoa! So we bonded, obviously, immediately in that. And then my bass player is younger, so I'm like in between these two guys. Mm-hmm. Literally, my bass player is the age, could be my guitarist's son. That's the age difference. And he's more into, beats, like heavy, not trance, but you know, the I don't even know what it's called, electronic. He doesn't play electronic, but he likes the feel of the beat. So he, and he likes Metallica. So he writes heavier stuff, and so he writes a lot, most of our music, resonates with me. Then when we go to record, I hear it one way, and then my guitar player, who's, you know, a softer edge, pulls it down from the heavy, and it becomes something different. And it's like heavy but fun and commercial even. Like there's a commercial element to it where it's not like so screamo. It feels good. People have fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. Where can we find your stuff?
There's three songs on iTunes.
Okay.
And then I guess this one, Reluctant, will probably be released that day on iTunes as well. We just have one music video. We have another music video that's almost done. It's been in the works for a while. It's just a matter of timing the release of it. And we're just talking about going into the studio to do two more songs the week after the gig.
Cool.
I literally just met with a big music producer who lives in town. Mm-hmm. And we're just friends. And we're talking about town. And so his son is the drummer in my daughter's band.
Okay.
And my daughter is opening for us that night.
Oh, cool.
So my daughter's band is world premiering the first time they've played as a band.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another act in between us, and then we're headlining. And so I was talking to him about some of my ideas, and he's on board, and he said, you can record at my studio for free anytime you want. I'm like, I literally texted the guys right after. I'm like, guys, what are we doing the week after the gig? Is Fredo in town? We got to record these two songs right away.
Yeah, so, totally. So it's not an offer you get often.
Right. And I jumped on it, and there's a little bit of pushback. Well, I don't know. Blah. I'm like, are you kidding? So we're going to, hopefully Fredo will be in town.
That's awesome. And what time do you guys go on Friday?
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock? All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
A lot of people thought, oh man, that's late. That's what you get in a community, a family community.
Yeah, but for sure.
It's by design, because for a couple reasons, I want to stretch out the night for Joe.
Because
if we play early, people enjoy it and leave. We want to keep people in there as long as possible.
Yeah.
And this the act that's in between, my daughter's band is opening at 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just playing a half hour set. But there's going to be a bunch of young people there at that time. Then the next band will have a bunch of people, and then our people will start filtering in as well. So that crowd will stay constant. And then at 11 to midnight, it's just going to be a madhouse. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be another hour of people lingering. So sell drinks rather than play it 10 to 11, everybody's happy and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it helps Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd rather play at 10, but it works better at 11.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, man. Well, that's pretty much all I need.